OCI is the single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. Do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic. Take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/wallstreet.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Investing with IBD. If you're looking for a home where the bulls and bears and maybe the butterfly spreads roam, stop your search and get settled in. With the range, markets are now comfortably into the final trading month of 2023. The hopes, the prayers, and yes, despair for some investors, it's putting us into a big range. So how do you trade that range? And that's what we're going to be talking about today. It is Wednesday, December 6th, 2023, and Arusha Paris will not be joining us today. I'm going to be going solo a little bit on the hosting side, but I can't think of a better person to have as a guest than Anne-Marie Band, author of The Trading Book and CEO of thetradingbook.com. And Anne-Marie is not just a great trader, but also a great educator. It's great to have you on the show again, Anne-Marie. How are you doing?
Delighted to get to spend time with you. It's always fun.
Always a pleasure. We had a fun pre-show where basically you got to see my minivan and the mess it was. So I appreciated your patience with that. But now we can get into the real stuff. Let's start with the markets. I'm going to go ahead and pull up the S&P 500, or actually the SPY, because that's what most people are actually going to trade. And we're looking at a weekly chart here. So Anne-Marie, maybe you can kind of give us a sense of, we've got this strong rally that started on November 1st. We got the follow through day. This one looked like it, you know, was a lot different than the others. We're starting to get some breath. What is it that you're looking at? And are we getting too excited? Or is there reason to be cautious? What's your take?
Well, you know, as they say, optimism works well in portfolios. And so we do have a tendency to look at things optimistically. But when this move began in November, my thought was, what is fueling it? And so I still don't know for sure, but I'm willing to surmise that these increased bets that the Fed funds futures rates are suggesting that we're going to have cuts as early as January. And so what this did, first we had Bill Ackman saying, hey, I'm done with my shorts. And then shorts in the TLT. And then he said, I'm effectively long. And that moved everybody in. And then we got a little bit of weak data. And all of a sudden, the commodity technical advisors, the CTAs, began to pile in massively long. And I think I just read a stat, and I wish I could remember where it was from. It said that the speed at which money moved into the market was some of the fastest that we've had on record. And so when things move very, very swiftly, I always have this cautionary note in my head that says, hey, when things move fast, there's not enough volume that fills in. So how about if we just step back a bit and wait for a pullback that we can engage in? And so that's really what I'm looking at. If we were to look at the chart and say, all right, let's look at the volume that pushed the price up, right? At IBD, we talk a lot about volume running and the speed at which it's moving up and how much volume. And the volume's been fairly light on this push to the upside. Now, that doesn't always mean the price action is going to roll over, because as you can see in the low of 2021 in March, back over there, nobody believed, is that 2020, excuse me, at the COVID low?
Yeah,
COVID low. The volume was completely down as price was moving up. So there's nothing in stone that says, hey, listen, this reduced volume is going to give charts a plateau. So all we have is a little bit of a warning sign. And when that happens, I just say, let's look at the moving averages and do what we've seen happen in the past. And that's buy the dip and let it work until it doesn't.
Well, and in fairness to 2020, the volume that we were seeing was a lot of like little panic episodes where, I mean, it was the highest volume that we've ever seen on the exchanges. It was just by far, I mean, you can see how the moving average line just spiked. So it was almost like a return to normal levels. Initial ones were, you know, they were low comparatively, but still
much higher than we've ever seen.
So. Yeah, it was really interesting.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. You know, another thing, you mentioned the Fed funds rate and, you know, just in looking at the Fed funds futures, it really is interesting that I'm showing right now that the March, for the March Fed meeting, the futures is kind of predicting a 53.4% chance of a quarter rate cut by that meeting. And that's just, you know, stunning. Because it seemed like it was, you know, higher for longer. That's what the Fed keeps on saying. And I feel like there was a time where the market was kind of saying, oh, we don't believe you. We think it's going to come down, you know, by the end of 2023. Mm-hmm. That didn't materialize. So how much weight do you put on kind of what the market thinks and what the Fed is saying and then what actually happens? Because a lot can change.
Exactly. So ultimately, the only thing that matters is price and how traders are responding to that. Regardless of why it's moving, I'm going to approach the market cautiously and say, well, I'm above my moving averages. I'm going to trade into my known resistance zones. And then I'm just going to sort of trail my stop up. I'm not going to allow a large gap between how much I've made and think, okay, since I'm working with house money, I'll just leave my stop really wide. I don't think there's any place for that because here's the thing. Turn the clock back 12 months. And what we'll note is a lot of very big, very smart, very accomplished, nine-figure portfolio managers, right? That are running billions of dollars. They were saying there's going to be Fed cut rate. The Fed is going to cut rates February. Well, okay, it'll be May. It'll be June. It'll be September. And they've said that all year. And at some point, because of the hubris that's associated with a lot of things in the trading space and the investment space, they still have to blow the horn, irrespective of, listen, it's probably going to happen because everything runs in cycles. And, you know, the Fed was created to stop things from running in cycles, but everything runs in a cycle. And so the absurdity of it is beyond belief.
A tough job to like just,
absolutely.
Don't let nature take its course.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. We're here to make things go like this and nothing moves like that. And so at the end of the day, we have to look at it with a grain of salt and say, okay, there are some troubles. But right now we're in a cycle that is naturally bullish. And in an up year, a lot of times when we come into the end of the year and stocks have had a big group of stocks have had outstanding earnings, portfolio managers are going to trim those and rebalance things. And we have to say to ourselves, hey, if I lose my near-term support, I need to take profit where it sits and not just hang on and wait for it to come back, right? So that trailing stop becomes an incredibly important risk management device, but also for portfolio returns. That's what I'm trying to keep as opposed to going, hey, I'm just going to let it run its cycle. I'm just going to take profits and expect that pullbacks are coming because volatility is rising. We can see it, even though the VIX is not saying it.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, the VIX, I mean, that's down, you know, around 12 right now,
yeah, 13, absolutely.
Which is, you know, among the lowest areas that it yes. really tends to hit. So what is the disconnect there? What is it about the VIX that is not showing the true picture of volatility?
So what's very interesting about the VIX is it measures 30 days of volatility. Mm-hmm. And because we have these zero DTEs mm-hmm. flushed into the market, the VIX doesn't even capture that.
Right.
And so we realize if the VIX is not capturing it, then that's the reason for wild swings moving in and out of the indices that really the VIX just doesn't measure. And so they devise something else called the MOVE index. Well, that also doesn't take advantage of anything. And so that doesn't really tell us what's going on. But if you look at 0 to 5 DTE flow, there you get to see where people are pushing on market price and pulling on it. And those stretches get very, very wide because they're really billions of dollars every day in notional value that's either expiring or getting very close to expired before they pull it off.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So let's turn back to the SPY, because we've kind of covered a lot in terms of the macro, and certainly it's worth mentioning that we do have, I mean, we had the JOLTS report yesterday. You know, more jobs numbers today. And then, of course, we have the non-farm payrolls on Friday. So a lot of eyes will be on that, you know, looking for more weakness in the labor market as possibly a good thing for the Fed, you know, cutting in the future. But mm-hmm. let's switch to the technical side. So
yeah.
I know that you love your ranges. What ranges and areas are you thinking are of interest right now? And how are those ranges guiding your actions?
So we're at the top of a range right now. 460 is what I'm looking at in the near term. And that presents as a high that was, let's see, 322, March of 22.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that lower high there is the number that is the topping formation that I'm staring down that will, if we break it, the first thing that's going to happen is everybody that went short there is going to have to say, holy cow, I've got to cover. And that is going to cause buying because they have to buy to leave the market, which does two things. If someone's buying the breakout, they're buying to enter. If someone's buying to leave the market, they take liquidity away from the market, right? Because they buy, but that means they're not playing anymore.
Right.
And so if that breaks, I imagine a pretty good push and then a pullback that's shallow to retest. And then we go up to that 480. Mm-hmm. If we get to that 460 and we break out, and then on the pullback, we lose that 459, 458, it falls right back into the range. And my suspicion, because there are so many balls that are literally hanging in the air, right? Housing issues, even though the mortgage applications were gigantic today, used cars, inventories, all sorts of things we're seeing that might be a little suspect to more upward growth. If all of those things come to pass, then we'll definitively know. But right now we don't. And so the market is caught in this tug of war between people who think, wow, we are really going to have a hard landing, and people who think, wait, I think the Fed is going to pull this off.
Right.
Right. And so that is got everybody sitting on the sidelines, not putting a lot of cash to work, which is something to be certain of, because a lot of the money managers have made a fair bit this year. They're not going to be putting big bets on into the end of the year because they want to make sure they've captured what they made. And so that also is going to be liquidity that's coming out of the market. And again, when liquidity leaves the market, volatility increases. And so what I am seeing is above this 460, there's a chance we can move up into 480, but it's let's wait and see, allow it to confirm and pull back. If you take it straight out, you're going to have to be quick or you're likely to be dead. It's not going to run straight up. And on the bottom end, I like the number around 430 on SPY, as it holds a zone that's, 435. 435 to 430 is a really nice breakout area from a high that was created on June of 2022. Was that June? No, August. August of 2022. That peak right there is a region that traders bounced off of, failed and danced around for many, many weeks and then lifted off that edge. So that's where I see the range-bound event being between 430 and 460, which, you know, turns out to be about, you know, maybe 300 to 500 points in the SPX or the futures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think that's a good wrap for the ranges that we're looking at there. Anything to say about the NASDAQ in this conversation? Just because the NASDAQ certainly has been the more powerful index. If we just pull up the Qs real quick on the weekly chart, you know, it's getting right up there as well, near kind of that 400 level, and you know, from back in 2021 top. But this was definitely the leader for most of the year. Magnificent Seven. What are your thoughts on anything different that the NASDAQ is telling us?
So I'm not sure the NASDAQ is telling us this yet. But if we are actually experiencing a sector rotation of some kind, then all of the great big giant movers in tech are going to start giving back a little bit of their profit as traders go, hey, I bought this in my IRA. It's up 30%. I'm going to take some profit. I don't have to worry about tax harvesting. I don't have to worry about anything like that. I'm just taking this profit coming into year end because I don't know what's going to happen. And I'm sitting on a wad of cash, right? People are going to say that makes prudent sense for me to trim my gains that are sitting in my portfolio. And we sort of seen that a couple of days this week. And AMD actually just came out with a big whatever that said they are going to be able to compete against NVIDIA. And, you know, there's all kinds of things going on right there. So I do believe there's rotation coming. And I am seeing that the Qs are getting weaker. And as a matter of fact, they're getting weaker than, say, the Russell 2000 or the IWM.
I was just going to ask you your opinion on that because the Russell, and you know what, I'll go ahead and pull up IWM.
Yes, IWM, right. Yes.
I mean, it was certainly, I mean, we saw this a lot in individual stocks, but, you know, the reversal today, but some real big strength last week and back above the 200-day moving average line after getting turned away a couple times. Is it time to get, you know, more interested in small caps?
So again, we think to ourselves, why this move? And this is where interest rates matter, right? The smaller a company is, the more sensitive it is to interest rates. If the Fed funds futures rate and everybody and their grandma are saying, hey, they're going to cut, you're going to go, all right, well, I'll take a nibble in there. Let's say that's actually true. I'm going to get involved in there. And the second that the volume starts moving, those algorithms go, I'm taking it. And since it was relative resistance at 180, people who were short said, holy smokes, I got to get out of here. Yeah. Right. And so I want the IWM to prove itself out. And the way it'll prove itself out to me is if it comes back and retests some of these moving averages. With a relative strength index of 50, we anticipate that bounces are going to fade, right? That's essentially what that's telling us. I don't have strong relative strength, and so I will fade into these higher levels. And the moving averages are also telling us that. So I'd love to see a retest of 180, potentially a little bit more, and see if that holds. But I suspect a lot of these traders are on a wing and a prayer. They're closing their eyes, hitting the button and going, okay, yes, this is going to happen. Right. And
big money, no whammies.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a pretty good look at the markets. When we come back, we're going to take a look at some of the strategies you might use to kind of go for the expectation that we could improve, but how to protect yourself in case we don't. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its zero-trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zero-trust-AI.
Welcome back to the Investing with IBD podcast. It's Justin Nielsen here, your host, and joining me on the show this week is Anne-Marie Band, returning. She, of course, is the CEO of The Trading Book and also author of The Trading Book. So we were talking a lot about the market and ranges, and the next question is, if you're kind of expecting that you might, you know, have some temporary weakness as we pause at these levels and then strength afterwards, what is the best way to kind of play that thesis out and profit from it?
So that's a great question. And my favorite tool to use is the butterfly and to position it on both the put side and the call side. And so let's anticipate what that might mean. Let's say that in the next 60 days, we see a big move, but we have no idea which way it's going to go. Mm-hmm. Assuming we do not have underlying stock and we're just playing the ranges of, hey, this might really roll over or this might really break out. How would we look at that? And so the beauty of the butterfly is that it creates opportunities that are low risk and high reward. Now, the flip side is that when we just look at a butterfly, if you have ever used a butterfly where it's you buy a call that is somewhere, sometimes it's at the money, sometimes it's out of the money, and then you sell two calls below it at higher levels, and then you buy another one. So it's called a butterfly because the center is fat. It's got two sold calls, and the wings are on the other side. And so what you want to do if you buy a butterfly, you want to make money on the move where, let's say it's a call, on the move upward. And so Boeing is a great example of this because back in October, right after earnings, and just after the shenanigans and all of the terrible things happening across the pond, I said, hey, let's position that we see Boeing either get to the top of the range or the bottom of the range. Mm-hmm. Now, why would we think the bottom of the range? Well, if all of a sudden a bomb goes off somewhere, everyone is going to sell everything for just a few days, maybe even hours, but things could go very nasty. And so we positioned on both sides. Now, when you look at a butterfly and you design what you're looking at in general, here is the easiest way to do it. And I'm going to delete all of the levels.
And there's a lot of them there. you like to mark up your charts.
I do mark up my charts quite a bit. So when we take a look at this, this is a monthly formation. And so what we can see are that traders really came in and bought the 115 to 120 area very hard. It double bottomed here in the middle of 2022, towards the end of 2022. And it's really been running, and it's created another region right at about 189 and then a top end at about 140, right? So my eyeballs are telling
240,
me.
240, you mean?
Excuse me. Thank yeah. you. 240. Yeah.
You were so testing to see if I was paying attention.
My eyeballs are telling me, hey, this chart is sitting in a very wide range. Now, we could say, wait a second, is this some sort of base that might be forming up that's a little bit higher that says, all right, I'm going to recover? So the answer is yes. We're thinking, hey, it could be like that. It's making higher lows. But if we have something else happening, we could see it drift well to the bottom of the range. And so once our eyeballs say, okay, this is my floor, this is my ceiling, then we think to ourselves, all right, what's going to happen in 60, 90 days, right? So at the end of October or the beginning of October, we said, you know, this is a good place. It's got a bounce action event. It could either fall to the floorboard. I don't know. It could, or it could move up into the top of the range. And so we did position that. And the call side, let's see if this can work this way. The call side of these was the 220, 230, 240 formation. And when we bought it, we paid something like 37 cents for this position. So we literally could sell it outright and not have anything to worry about and could have made the profit. But the way I like to use this butterfly is to say, all right, we have until January. It moved into the direction that we were looking for. Either here was the downside one, and here's the upside one. These were actually both in January. Pardon me for that. Right? And so as we're looking at this, we can say, okay, what do I want to wait for in case there's either more upside or it moves back into the range? Now, I'm of the mind that it's going to move back into the range. So what I will do is sell the long call that's sitting there. And if I sell the long call, where are the chains?
So which strike?
I'm going to sell the 220, 230. Okay. Mm-hmm. So if I do that, I will collect $220, $230. If I sell the 220 and then sell the 230, I will collect $7.55.
Sell the 230 or buy back?
Oh, yes. I'm going to sell the whole spread. Yes. I'm going to sell the 220 and buy the 230. Mm-hmm. That's going to give me $7.55 of profit. Now, you might say, but Anne-Marie, that says 236, which means the other short 230 is still in the money. That's why if I was selling the whole thing, it would only be $1.73. But this call side is saying 755. So before I do that, I want to see the chart break down. I know that it's likely coming, and it's so deep in the money right now that if it pulls back just a few pennies, or it pulls back all the way to $6 over the next few days / weeks, whatever, my credit is not going to shift very much at all. Mm-hmm. It's actually going to give me a very nice base. So when I close this out, I now have $10 of risk sitting right here, but I've collected $8 of it. Mm-hmm. So at the most, I have this plus how much I paid for it initially as all the risk I have sitting in there. Now, what happens beautifully, we did this with Eli Lilly. We did this with Lilly earlier in the year. We did a put spread, a put butterfly. It went deep into the money. We sold it, and then we watched the other side expire because I think Lilly has something like 87% institutional ownership, maybe even higher than that. And so that big dip right there, you know, they're going to come out and go, I think we probably ought to buy some of that. And right. So it was a fairly good setup that allowed us to buy that dip and feel comfortable with it. Yeah, so that's really...
And what time period were you doing that Lilly trade?
We did that... I have to look at the chart because it only gave us one shot at that dip. I think it was...
Was this the most recent dip to the 50-day moving average line?
Yes.
After the summer? Okay.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very nice. It was really... it was truly an outstanding trade. And all we thought was, okay, let's have reversion to the mean. Let's have it come back to the breakout level. And then Bob's your uncle. We're out of there. Not waiting for any rotation because we know it's got a ton of institutional ownership. We don't want to be short anything like that for anything more than a snap trade. Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times when I think of the butterfly spread, and again, this is for those of you that aren't as familiar with options, you know, there's definitely a lot to kind of parse out here. But if you think about the butterfly, I always think of the risk graph and how it's, as you mentioned, you've got your wings that kind of tell you, hey, you're covered on the downside, defined risk. It's a defined risk trade. So you're not going to lose, you know, more than you know, you're not going to be surprised. You know, it's like,
right.
You know what you're getting into, and the max risk is the max risk. But it always has that pointy look, like what you're showing on your chart. It has that, you know, so in this case, you know, 230 is where you get your max profit. And a lot of people are like, well, gosh, how likely am I to nail it 230 on the expiration date? And they feel like, oh, maybe I shouldn't do this because I'm just not that good. But what you're saying is there's a lot of ways to play with this. You don't need it to finish at 230 on the expiration. You're talking about a trade that you can do well before the expiration.
Absolutely. Kind of, mm-hmm. Absolutely. So that's why a lot of people look at these probability graphs or their risk graphs and they go, well, that looks terrible. And then the second thing they think is, I don't think I know how to navigate through that. And so the big thing to recognize is that you allow price to drive your decisions. And so
the price of the stock?
Yes.
I mean, yes.
The price of the stock to drive your decision. So I did not expect Boeing to run so far so fast. And when it runs really far, really fast, it's sort of the same thing like a calendar spread. All of a sudden you've made a fair bit of money. And it's not anywhere near the expiration. And you go, well, what do I do? Well, being the simpleton that I am, my answer is always take the money and run. And so when you take a profit like that, a lot of times we go, I'm going to try and wait for this peak, or I'm going to do X, Y, or Z. And really what you want to do is just let the stock breathe and move. Allow it, because you're choosing strikes that are known areas of support and resistance, you just let the traders come into that support and resistance and then go, okay, what are they doing here? And so you would look at it at the end of the trading day. So when it hit 230, I had an alert go off. And so I looked at the chart and I went, well, we got a bunch of higher lows, higher highs. So I definitely do not want to take this position off yet, because if I take it off, I'm going to be naked, not naked, but I'm going to have the short spread that's going to expose me to risk. I don't want to do that. And so I wait. And that's what I've been doing. And as look at how long I've been waiting. I've been waiting since the middle of last week. And here we are into the next week and it's still rising. But here's what I notice over here to the left, 1, 2, 3, it took 4 weeks for that to stabilize and choose to come in. So I'm going to anticipate that I have the same sort of thing happening. And as it does that, perhaps it'll weaken and come right into this 230, as I suspect it will. And then I'm going to close the long call spread and I'm going to watch that short call spread, because now I have almost $8 of profit. Mm-hmm. See, I've got a ton of wiggle room. I'm not going to get up and go, right? Because I have a lot of room. And so I'm going to watch it. But what I'm waiting for is for the traders who participated here to tell me I'm done. And that's when we move with the butterfly.
Mm-hmm. And so to be clear, when you're choosing your strikes, because again, you laid out, you know, the ranges that were of importance to you, you know, that 240 high, very critical, you know, a support level. So does that become your outside edges? And then do you just your middle strike is just exactly in the middle of those two areas? Or do you ever shift one way or the other? Do like an unbalanced butterfly? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe talk about the situations in which you would do that, where you might favor one side over the other in terms of where you do your two options.
Okay, so here is here's the general short answer for that. Option premium is very, very important to me, and I love a deal, so I'm going to go hunting for the mispriced option. That gets a little tricky to describe,
okay.
But at the end of the day, if you look at your levels and you say, okay, I'm going to say, first of all, this is my old breakout zone, 220. So if the stock is weak and I'm wrong, because remember I was down here, it was like 180, 185, and we were looking up at the 220 because it was going to be very cheap because it was so far out of the money. And so I looked at that and I said, all right, that's going to be my baseline. 240 is going to be the top end, because I have a tendency to underestimate the power of a move that's in progress. If I had it in hindsight, I might have said, you know, why not just take the 230, 240, 250? But I thought, holy smokes, that's $70 away. That's insane. It's not going to move that. Right. And it did. Right. And so these moves, sometimes I underestimate the power of a move. And so that's really what's happening with this butterfly. It's really into the maximum profit area and moving a little bit over that edge. And so if I stare it down And I go, do I want this to be balanced or unbalanced? It might be that the front options are very likely to go at, to the money, right? My 220, 230. Mm-hmm. And I have a good amount, but let's say the 240 on the end is very expensive. And I think to myself, it's not going to go there. And I'd like to make the option a little cheaper, the butterfly a little cheaper. I'm going to buy the 245. And so it'll be an unbalanced butterfly because I can see, hey, you know, I don't think it's going to break out over the center of this linear regression channel because it's been, heavens, June of 2021, the last time it hit that channel. Okay. So I'm going to think to myself, hey, I could probably go really out of the money there and make things really cheap on my butterfly. But remember the pull and tug in the market. More risk, more reward.
Yeah.
Less risk, less reward. And so these butterflies have very low probabilities of expiring at the point.
Yeah.
And because we know that, we're not going to choose that as our decision. We're mm-hmm. not going to hold it to expiration. We're going to say, let me manipulate the options and say, all right, I'm just going to close the call side and I'm going to take, I know I could have made $800 on this, but I'm going to take $500 mm-hmm. and I'm going to be okay with that. Right. Yeah. So that's
especially really since sometimes in waiting for that last, yeah. you know, that last $20 to get the yes. full, you know, you can lose everything.
Right? Yes, absolutely. Matter of,
yeah. So very yeah. quickly. Okay. Well, this might be a lot for people to yes. digest. I want to remind folks that Anne-Marie is one of the contributors to our options stories on investors.com. She, every Friday, will have a new option story. You've been doing a lot of calendar wheels. You've also been sharing these butterfly spreads. Sometimes it's a little bit easier to get this when you're reading it. And this is definitely one of those episodes that you might have to rewatch just to kind of get yeah. everything down and, you know, play around with it a little bit if you're new to the butterflies. But thank you so much for sharing that. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the stocks that we might see setting up for their own butterfly trades. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
AI may be the most important new computer technology ever, but AI needs a lot of processing speed, and that gets expensive fast. Upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is the single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. Do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic. Take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/wallstreet. Oracle.com/Wall Street.
Welcome back to the Investing with IBD podcast. It's Justin Nielsen here, your host. And joining me this week is Anne-Marie Band. She is the CEO of thetradingbook.com, author of The Trading Book, and I should have mentioned this at the beginning, a contributor to IBD. She has a weekly options column that she shares her knowledge with us. So for those that were, you know, kind of struggling to understand all those aspects of the butterfly and how you roll things over, she's always providing a lot of great knowledge on a weekly basis in our options column at investors.com. And Anne-Marie also brought up a very good point for those of you that are kind of like, gosh, I really wish I could read a little bit more about what she was saying. There is a transcript available for the podcast at investors.com. So that's something you can also take a look at. So Anne-Marie, let's get into it. We've got the Boeing as our kind of case study of how you handled this in October. October is when you put that on, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you had no idea that we were going to get a follow-through day on November 1st. It was going to be that powerful, which is why you kind of, okay, I'm not going to expect 70 points. I'm going to kind of temper my expectations. But what kind of trades are you setting up now with your butterflies? And maybe we could start with Tesla. Just had the Cybertruck event there. A lot of people are looking at, you know, what might be possible. A lot of people still eyes on this one. So what is your expectation here? Or I should say expectations, because there might be multiple scenarios. Mm-hmm. And how do you set up a butterfly where it's at right now and the strikes and everything.
Super. So if we take a look at Tesla in the chart, we can see that just like every single time we always look at the same stuff, right? We say, where is old support that looks like new resistance? And there's a possibility it's going to break to the north. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't, it's going to break back down into the range. And so I'm just going to put resistance that becomes support, that is both support and resistance, and then it breaks again. So this 215 area becomes really very important for me to look at, as well as the 240 area. So that's what we're going to look at. Mm-hmm. We're going to go to Tesla. And we're going to think, how long is it going to take for this to wash, right? We're in December. I suspect by March, we ought to have something fairly significant floating around in terms of movement. If things look superb and we get the January effect and price moves up wonderfully, we can get out of the butterfly nice and early with profit. If it goes down, same sort of thing. If it takes a little bit of time, maybe January's up just a little bit, or February's up just a little bit, or the Fed all of a sudden decides they're going to raise rates again because inflation is sticky, or whatever, I suspect we're going to have some sort of move that's got oomph. And I want to have enough time in case it takes more than a hot minute to occur. And so the numbers that I looked at, that 215 there, I want to say I'm going to go to 220. I want to buy the 220. And then I'm going
to put.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're going to do the put side first. I'm going to do 220. And then I'm going to use the 200. I'm going to buy one, sell two. And then I'm going to go to 220, 180. And that's going to give me a debit of about $2. And so what I might think here, now, again, $2 debit, $20 in the difference between the strike. So it's going to be about $17.75 as my maximum profit. And you can see that in the risk profile. Do I have other things sitting around here? It shouldn't look like that. Oh, you know why? Because it's March. Never mind. It's just a hassle to do that. You have to go backwards, and here it is right here.
But there it is, yeah.
Yeah. So my peak event for the put side is at the 200 area. Legitimately, I'm going to want to make my money over here on this edge, or maybe over here on this edge. I'm probably not going to get that peak, but if I can make $1,000 after only spending $200, that's going to be sweet. I'm going to be happy about that. Okay.
And as a reminder, that $200 is the max loss that you're
exactly
looking at. Just a debit. And you can see that, as you mentioned, on the wings, you know, it gets really, you know, kind of nice and doesn't move, you know, once you hit 200, that's it, you know, and that's right at your outside strike.
Your threshold. Yes, absolutely. Okay. And so we do that on the put side, and then on the call side, we're going to take 240. Wow, that's expensive. I'm going to say 245, 260. It's not the same width. Two of those, and then 245 to 260 is 15. So that's 75 is next. And so the call butterfly is going to be $1.40. Now, I might twist this around and say, hey, let's use a 215 here so that gets a little bit cheaper, and we'll use 185, right? So now they're both in line all together. And so now if we go see the risk profile, we have two of them where we have either here at the 200 or over here at the 240. Right in between here, I make nothing, right? I lose my $268. But if it moves dramatically like I want it to, it's going to be a great trade. And what you want to do is say, all right, I'm going to wait until it gets to the middle strike, and then I'm going to start staring it down. So that's going to be, you put an alert for 200, you put an alert for 260, and then you let the price work itself out.
Mm-hmm. And so then once you hit those alerts, mm-hmm. that's when are you taking
action on
that spread, or are you taking action on the spread that it didn't hit?
Okay, so you always want to take action on the spread that it does hit, mm-hmm. but not right away. When the alert goes off, your brain has to go, okay, let's see how this confirms. Because if it continues to rise, you're going to be in the money until it starts going all the way over to the other side of the butterfly, mm-hmm. right? So you can say, hey, listen, what is fairly likely is if it moves into these spaces, this debit is going to start being 290, 300, something like that. And you can look at it easily and go, hey, I have a delta of 0.79 here, right? Delta is the probability of something expiring in the money. So it's a 0.79 delta that I close this call at 260. Very, very small. This is saying that the risk of losing this entire amount is very high if you go into expiration. Now, this model doesn't tell us anything about volatility expansion. It doesn't tell us anything about what's going on. So we can follow the price out in anticipation of what the market might do overall. But the wonderful thing is that you can be kind of right and still double your money. What you don't want to do is bet the farm here, because you can spend $1.50 and make $15. That's very appealing for somebody to go, hey, I'm going to buy 400 of these or whatever. You know, there's a lot of liquidity in Tesla, so you could probably do a lot of them, but you wouldn't want to, because it's not one of those trades. It's a trade where you skim the top, take some of the nice profit on it, and then move on to the next event.
Great. Well, let's go ahead and shift gears here a little bit. And do you want to go through maybe one more?
Sure.
And we talked a little bit about oil. So maybe we could have you go through an oil trade, maybe XOP, which is an ETF for the explorers and producers in oil. And this is one that was looking, I mean, oil was looking like it was potentially coming down and maybe looking at some support, but now it's getting a little iffy. It seems like some of the areas are losing support. So how do you judge this right here?
So I think you're absolutely spot on. Something's afoot. What? We don't quite know. And so again, we're going to look at the top of the chart, and we're going to look at the bottom of the chart, and we're going to anticipate that we've got some sort of motion on the horizon. And so the bottom of my chart looks a little bit like 120. The top of my chart looks like 155. So 120 and 155 are going to be the beginning strikes of our double butterflies, right? And so I'm going to undo this. And we are going to go to March. And we've got 115. Is that what I said? Yes. 115 to 105. That's 10 to 95. And that's going to be 67 cents with a $10 event move. Okay. And the other side is 155. We'll go to 165. Interesting pricing there. And then 175.
And you mentioned there was interesting pricing there. What's interesting about it? You know, because with the untrained eye, I'm like, hey, it's just a bunch of numbers. What's going on?
I believe that they're mispricing the call site here. They're making it very, very cheap. And so I think it might be because of what's going on in the macro events in oil right now with China credit downgrade and just a number of things that are making people think, hey, listen. So for instance, if I go to 115, I'm $15 away from the current price. 155 is $25 away from the price, but it's still relative resistance right up here. And so, you know, could you say, hey, maybe I want to do 145 so they're priced more closely? This is something that I look at sometimes. I'll go, hey, these guys are not priced equally, so maybe I just need to see if I could do something like that. So let me move this to 165. Because I like them to be near the price of each other. So, all right. So that's more reasonable because they should still be pricing positive flow into the oil sector because of everything else that's going on in the longer term. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's really what we would be looking at. And again, here's our risk profile. We have either the peak right here, somewhere around 105, and see as it moves in closer, this is where we want to make our money. If it starts going over here, that's okay too. The second it starts moving down into this edge, you go, you know, I probably ought to cover that up and take my 200 bucks. Yeah. Uh-huh. So, and then the other side is right over here. And the same sort of thing. It moves up into the area. And the further it moves past this peak, the more of the profit slips away. But you can see there's a lot of profit to still get involved here. And the deltas are fairly high, 6 and -4. Normally, they're about 1 or 2. So these are really nice. I actually like this a lot.
Okay. And, you know, as you mentioned, that there's... you've kind of given these a lot of room to move. And exactly. So, you can kind of, you know, as you said, just kind of set your alerts. And then if it starts getting into that area, that's where you can start taking some action.
Absolutely.
And you have the option of closing it entirely, or it looked like you were, you know, sometimes closing part of it, you know,
yes.
And adjusting as you see fit. So,
yeah.
Any final thoughts on that? Just again, for people that are just starting out, certainly again, read Anne-Marie's columns on Fridays, look at the transcript here. And also, you know what I want to mention, because you do a lot of great stuff on X, formerly known as Twitter, your handle there?
Anne-Marie Trades.
At Anne-Marie Trades. So a lot of great content there. Gosh, you're so good at like options, futures, day trading, swing trading. When do you start going for longer term trades, or is that just not your thing?
It is. I'm learning from the IBD folks how to hang on longer to position. And which is what I love. I love learning and growing in the space. I am by definition a short-term trader, but it's usually short-term when I go, hey, listen, I'm just going to hang on to this for about 4 or 5 weeks. And that's up into, I'm very much moving average based. If it comes into a resistance area And then it starts getting closer to my moving average. And then it loses a level. I go, you know what? I got to go. And so when the run comes and the market stops being sideways, I'm going to sit in and sit tight and just keep raising the stops. Right now, I just keep raising the stops until I'm fairly sure it's going to stop me out.
Yeah.
And that, that's been working so far. But you know, there are always those trades that I look at and I go, oh my goodness, I left so much money on the table there.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that a lot of people have mentioned about your book, that you do go through your process of, hey, you know, I wasn't a genius that had this natural talent. It took me a while. And
yeah,
here's how I learned, you know, and as you said, I mean, we're all still learning. So
yes,
it's great that you share your stuff. And especially what I like about your articles, because sometimes I edit them, is how you're going through the different scenarios. If this happens, I'm going to do this. If this happens, I'm going to do this. And
yes,
it's very clearly laid out. So very good. Hey, Anne-Marie, it was a pleasure having you on. Always great chatting with you. And thanks so much for sharing your knowledge today.
Always happy to be here. It's so much fun to talk stocks and options.
Okay. That's going to wrap it up for us this week. Join us next week. It's going to be Arusha and I just kind of chatting about the markets on our own. We're going to welcome them back and kind of chat about the year that we've had and some of the guests that we've had. So we'll kind of do a little bit of a wrap to the year there and see where we're at in terms of the market at that time and any stocks that are setting up. So hope you join us for that show next week. And thanks a lot for watching us this time around. Bye-bye now. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast if you haven't already. We'd really appreciate it. You can also send us your questions and comments to investingpodcast@investors.com. We would love to hear from you and may use your comments on an upcoming episode. This podcast is for informational and educational purposes only, and nothing should be construed as a recommendation to buy, hold, or sell any securities. Make sure to consider consulting with your financial advisor before making any investment decisions.